Welcome to the Original Recipe Group Big Book Step Study. Broadcasting from Newcastle, PA, every Monday night from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Eastern on Zoom.
Peter, thank you so much for that warm welcome. I was at that Jokins meeting, and it's great to see all you guys. And TK, man, you always make me laugh. It's so good to see you. Wow. And it's an honor and privilege to speak tonight. How much time, Peter? 2-0? Okay. Great.
John, it's up on TK screen. You can, if you see it.
Okay, beautiful. I see it. Thank you. So my name is John. I'm an alcoholic. I do have experience with these steps that are laid out in the Big Book. I did them with the help of Big Book Step Study sponsor, actually two of them. And I've made almost all my amends. I have two left. And I do practice steps 10, 11, and 12 daily because it gives me the life I have, which is an amazing life. Try to stay on this step, but I do think I should share if there's anybody new or that's been in AA for a while and you know, was struggling. So I got sober in 1992 after a disastrous, about 20 years of drinking. And it was a miracle that I got sober, but I got sober like right away. Somebody told me to ask God to remove the obsession to drink, and I did. And I started jumping into the steps right away. But I never did a decent and thorough inventory. I fooled myself into believing I did. I did the steps on my own without even a sponsor's direction the first year. It was a joke, but at the time I felt that was helpful, right? And then I did an AWOL, which is a way of life. And I went through all of it, but I actually drove all the way from New Hampshire down to Boston, to Arch Street in Boston, to read my fifth step, which is basically half of a yellow legal pad at that time, to this guy, Brother Fred, who listened to Anonymous Fifth Steps. And halfway through, I told him I was done because it was shameful stuff there. But by the time I drove back to the border of New Hampshire, I convinced myself I had read it all. And I was like, now I've done two of them. Look at how good I am, right? The good news is I stayed sober. My life got incredibly amazing. I mean, at the end of my drinking, I was living on Hampton Beach. I was basically homeless, like 5 months behind on rent, right? And now I'm three and a half years sober, and life is great. I've met a wonderful woman in AA. We bought a fixer up a house on a river on Great Bay. I have a home now. We're going to get married. I got a great job. I'm running a Saturn car dealership, and I'm getting worse. I'm going to meetings every day. I went to a 12 and 12 meeting every Saturday night for those entire 3 and a half years. And we went around and talked about the steps. I would say, oh, well, what that one means to me is this, or I think that means this, or I think I should do that, because I didn't have any experience doing it, right? And anyways, I actually fully believed to the bottom of my heart that if I hadn't bumped into this other woman who I knew down in Massachusetts and told her the truth when she asked me how I was doing, I'd be dead right now. Because I was lying to myself. I had told my wife, I says, I think I'll do another fourth step. I downloaded a Hazleton guide. I sat down in the living room of our home and I looked at it. And I said, you know what, honey, I don't have any resentments. This is a waste of time. And I threw it away. So I bumped into this other woman down in Methuen, Mass. And she told me, she goes, have you ever heard of Big Book Step Study? And I was like, what's that? And she says, well, there's a meeting in Durham, New Hampshire. It's a little small meeting, but you can go there, but you won't be able to speak. I'm like, what? But something intrigued me about it. And I ended up asking for a Saturday morning off. I ran a car dealership, but I took off on that Saturday and went to check the meeting out. That meeting eventually became the Newington meeting. I went to that meeting fully expecting to be shared and having people want me to speak. And halfway through listening to Mike D from Quincy speak, I realized I hadn't done any work and I desperately wanted what these people had. So I ran up to somebody at that meeting and asked them to help me. And I got started on doing this, and that saved my life. So if there's somebody similar to me that's struggling, you know, jump into this work. Because at that time I had this beautiful woman, but I was looking at every other woman that walked by. I was running this car dealership and they were paying me really well. I was stealing from them because they weren't paying me enough. Not what I thought I was making, right? And on the highway, I was a psychopathic rageaholic waiting to kill somebody on the road. If you left your directional on, I wanted to cut you off the road because you were, you know, telling me that you were tougher than me. That's how crazy it was. Anyways, so that's my alarm. Sorry. You know, I did all the steps up to the fourth step, And when I actually knelt down and did my third step prayer on my knees with my sponsor down at the Linfield Sunday night meeting, I actually really meant it. I saw what these people were doing. We were driving down to the Somerville men's meeting every Friday night and hearing these guys speak from the Cape. They were coming up here to our meetings and speaking, just carrying this message to us. And I knew I really desperately needed this. I wanted to be how those guys were, free, you know? My sponsor told me, he said, you know, go home, take your first five subject notebook. He said, kneel down, do the third step prayer and ask God to give you the names of the people who resentful that, right? And I actually, when I drove home from that night, I actually took my first five subject notebook and I knew something was going to be different. And I actually wrote in there like a little prayer to God, something to the effect of, God, I have no idea what's going on, but I actually really think this is going to work. Please help me do this. I really want your help. So I knelt down. I had like 250 names. Like my, I just stopped because my hand was in pain from writing, right? The very first name popped up was this woman named Melinda Grossa, who I had in first grade in Revere Public School System. She said I hit her and it got me thrown out of the public school system and sent to St. Michael's in Lynn. If you had asked me 5 minutes before I knelt down and did that third step prayer, who's the girl in first grade that you didn't like? I would have bet you $1,000 I couldn't have come up with it. And it all just came out. God gave me the names like you read about. It was just one name after another. Sometimes people would remind me of somebody else, but I had a lot of names. Let's leave it at that, right? And I was astounded because I was a person who, what, 3 or 4 months before that, thought I didn't have any resentments. And here I have all these resentments at all these people, right? I was told to put my own name down and God's name down. I had like 80 resentments against myself. I had a ton of resentments against God because it was God's fault that the way my life was, right? I had no idea that that wasn't true at the time. You know, so the book tells us what to do, the way I lay it out. People, they read it very nice. Says, you know, resentment's the number one offender. It's a spiritual malady. If we can overcome that, we'll straighten out mentally and physically. And that's been my experience, you know, doing this work. My health and my mental, like I think they call it EQ. Like I'm a mellow normal human being now. I don't go off the rails at anything anymore. And I'm a guy who used to. I was in front of a nightclub in Portsmouth one night, and I went up to ask the guy at the doorman, who I knew, a question. And somebody said, "Hey, don't cut the line." And I chased that man around a parked car 75 times, telling him I was going to kill him because he was saying that to me. Right? That's how I went off the rail, right? And I wasn't even that hammered that night. Not good. So I listed people, institutions, and principles with whom I was angry, right? And then I had to put down the cause. Who I'm resentful at, the cause, like why was I upset, right? And then how it affected me. I still have all my writing because I use it to you know, help people that I sponsor. And I was digging through. I keep them under my desk in an old briefcase, and I keep all my five subject notebooks in there. And I figured to pull them out, look at some, and see if any of these made sense. So I just randomly flipped like page 9 again. Yeah. So it was this guy, Steve D, right? What was the cause for him? What was the cause? He made me feel guilty. He quit. He was one of my salesmen, right? Would it affect my self-esteem, my pride, security, and fear? The turnaround questions, where was I selfish? I wanted what he had. This guy was an incredible salesman. I wasn't. Where was I dishonest? I never stood up and said anything about it. Where was I self-seeking? I people-pleased, then flirted with Diane, which was his girlfriend, right? Where was I afraid? I was afraid of not having Diane and him looking better than me. This guy didn't do anything to me, but I wanted his girlfriend, and I wanted to be better than him, you know? Just doing this work like this was so amazing for me. At the time I was doing it, I was living with my wife-to-be, Serene, who I've been with now for 33 years, right? But at the time, I had been married and divorced twice. I still was mooning after my first wife, this Judy, this British girl I lived with in England. And she was on my resentment list. And the freedom I got from doing the turnaround on her was amazing. So this is a woman who She was British. She was beautiful. I fell in love with her, and she was the girl I was going to bring back to revere and be a winner, right? People are going to go, wow, he's got a girl with an accent, right? That's how shallow I was. We get married, and the day after we get married on our honeymoon, we drive to this inn, and she starts crying. And I go, what's the matter? And I think she's all excited about the fact that she's going to be married to me now. She's so happy. And the truth was, she had just realized that her father loved her, and she was never going to leave England. The plan before that was we were going to America. The plan after that day was she was staying. And that was like a huge resentment. How could I possibly that be my fault? Right? That's not my fault. I did everything right. And when I did the turnaround on that, which was basically what, I got divorced. I left England in 81. And this had to be like 96 or 97 I was doing my turnarounds. And the truth was, I'm resentful at Judy because she told me that she wanted to stay in England. She was not going to leave her father because he found her father loved her, right? Which affected my self-esteem, my security, my pride, my ambition, like everything, right? Fear, right? I'm not enough, right? And when I did that, I had to get help from my sponsor on that one, right? I don't have it in front of me, but I know it. Where was I selfish? I wanted Diane to go to America with me. I mean, not Diane, Judith. Judith to go to America with me. Where was I dishonest? I told myself the lie that she didn't have a right to choose her own life. And when I saw that, it blew my mind. Because in my world, if you said you were going to do something, you should do it. And even if you didn't say that, you should do what you should do to keep me happy and to please me and make me happy, right? You know? Well, was I self-seeking? I tried to manipulate her into coming back. I said horrible things to her. I disparaged her in front of other people, right? And where was I afraid? I was afraid I wasn't enough. I wasn't lovable. That turnaround on the dishonest part was the freedom for me because I saw the truth. You know, the truth was she could do whatever she wanted to do. You know, that's the freedom we have as human beings. Talks in here about deep resentment leads on to futility and unhappiness. These books literally started to show me how I was. I've been doing a lot of work on this in all different areas. I'm a coach, and I've been like doing all kinds of modalities on myself to look at why I was the way I was. And I think this is it, and I'm not sure if it's true, right? As things change. But I somehow, where I grew up, was told this thing, which was, fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. It was like this thing where I grew up where if anybody did anything to you, don't ever forget it. Get even. Make them pay. Because if you didn't do that, you weren't a man. So I held on to resentments. And I spent so many hours of my life drunk and in early sobriety, right? Plotting other people's to get even with them. I used to plot to get even with people who didn't even do anything to me because I made up in my mind that they had done something to me. And that is a total waste of a life. I mean, there's probably cumulative hours of my life, probably 5 to 10 years, I would guess, where I spent thinking about other people, thinking about things they had done to me, upset about it, fearful, in despair because of why, because somebody could do this to me. And in the turnarounds of these questions, so many of those dishonesties that came up where I saw things like, you know, I thought I could read people's mind. I was resentful of people because they didn't like me and they liked me, right? But I thought they didn't like me. I came across one today as a woman. I'm actually doing some coaching stuff together. We're doing some of these courses together. Her name is Irene. She's amazing, right? She's 43 years sober. Psychologist, the whole nine. She's brilliant. And I told her, I said, you made my resentment list. And her husband, David, and she was like, what do you mean? I said, you know, I go, when I met you in AA, my first year, you hugged me, you and your husband were hugging me, being nice to me. And I go, you were too nice. There had to be an angle. Nobody is nice like that. You were out to get something out of me. And she was laughing her head off, right? How can you be angry at somebody for being too nice? But that's how it was to me, you know? Like such a waste of time. All the relationships of people. I was, unfortunately, a real womanizer. And And all those women made my list, right? Because they did it. And when I found out it was me, the common denominator in all of it was me, that I was just a selfish human being, right? And the freedom of seeing that and acknowledging it, believing it was true, being able to make amends for ones that I could and staying away from the ones I shouldn't, and running that by my sponsor every single time, right? And then able to be doing work where I was able to forgive myself for judging myself for being the type of person who would be like that, right? And prey on people and forgive myself and get free from that. What this work does for you is amazing. Not sure how much I have to share more here. There's a couple other things. The key part to it for me is where it says we turn back to the list but held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us, and whether it was fancied or real, it had the power to kill us, right? And then on 67, referring to our list again, that's what the turnaround questions are, right? Putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done. We're looking for our own mistakes, where we've been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. When I looked at all the situations I had in my writing, all the pages, I wouldn't say it was entirely my fault, but it's probably 95% of my fault. Most of the time where there was a resentment at somebody, I did something to get the ball rolling. I started the problem. Some people reacted to that, and then I retaliated at them even more and hated them more. And all they were doing was trying to, deal with somebody like me, And then at the top of 67, for people who aren't familiar with it, that angry man's prayer or sick man's prayer, that saved my life. I mean, in sobriety, while I'm doing my writing, people would do things to me, which really means people would just be living their lives and doing their normal things, but they wouldn't be reacting or doing things the way I thought they should be doing them, right? Would get me angry. And I would catch myself being angry. Joe the Bank used to say, "You'll feel it in the pit of your stomach." And I started to realize that every time I started feeling angry, it'd be here in my chest. I would feel it. And the truth was, the anger was there, but underneath it all was fear. So I started to look for where was I afraid right in the moment before I would even react. But if that anger was still there, I would say this prayer and ask God for help, "God, this is a sick man. How can it be helpful to you? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." I would do that. And I don't know how it works, but it would distract me enough from the resentment and anger that was starting to creep in that I would go, today I utilize different stuff. One of the things I've been doing recently that's really helped me in that area is I have a thing called a document, which is basically a declaration of who I say I am, right? And my very first line is that is a real simple thing. It's I come first always from love, only always, right? And I try and read that every morning, that all the other lines I have in that, but that's my first thing. So I'm out in the world, and if I'm saying that in the morning to myself, how can I be a jerk? I still can, believe me, I could find a way to do it, right? But I'm so much better. I just went, I got 1 minute left. I just went to a wedding in Colorado this past weekend for my nephew, and there's been a lot of tough family stuff that went on for the last 5 or 6 years, where my brother stole my mother's house and all this stuff. And I didn't care about it, but it caused a lot of rift in the family. And I got to go to that wedding of my sister's nephew, my sister's son, sorry, my nephew, and be joyous and free, coming from love the whole time. Not triggered by anybody's resentments towards me or upset because I spoke my mind, right? Just totally free. And my wife and I flew back from there. We're like, isn't this amazing? Isn't this amazing that we can both be, my wife's, in the program too. Isn't this amazing how free we can be around people that are upset with us? And that wasn't like that before. If I even thought you didn't like me in the slightest bit, I hated you, right? And I would find ways to do things to manipulate you so that your life wouldn't be as good as it could, so I could feel some sense of power, right? And And then you would retaliate at me, and then I would have problems and conflict in my life. You know, the ball rolling started it every single time. So I'm going to wrap up here. I'll say this, like this, doing this work and continuing to do this work has given me a life of beyond anything I ever imagined coming into AA. Not any of the monetary stuff. All that stuff is good, right? But the peace of mind I have, the love I have for myself, the respect I have for myself. I'm a man of honor and integrity now. I tell the truth. If I say I'm going to do something, I show up and do it. I get to be of service to other people. I have a whole different career now, but between the coaching thing and my medical device thing, I've been able to do all these medical missions in Ecuador, help people walk, right? And I was a washed-up car salesman when I got here. Anything's possible, I guess is what I'm trying to say. So if you're new to this, you know, ask somebody for help, reach out to somebody, have a conversation about what might be possible for you. The directions are in this big book on how to have a life second to none, and you deserve to have that life. You know, I didn't think I deserved it when I got here. I know now I do, and I know that I'm able to repay the absolute gift of grace that was given to me by helping other men. You know, so I think that's all I got to say. Thanks everybody for listening.
John,
Love you.
thank you very much.